Hi, I'm Terrell. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'll get the numbers out of the way. My top weight is somewhere around 325 pounds, and I don't know exactly my exact top weight because the scale was did not support my weight, so it was not working. And I have 46 years of abstinence, so I've been doing this deal for a long time. A little bit. I mean, it's literature is pretty clear. I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, so you can relate to me and know that I'm a compulsive overeater. So you know, I'm not preaching from book knowledge, and so you can understand that I have the recovery I get is because I am a compulsive overeater, and you know, I can offer experience, strength, and hope. I was born into an alcoholic family, so that's. I was kind of for the get-go, I was ready for a 12-step program or something. It was no one in my family wanted to be in the family, so we all found ways to escape, whether we were escaping. My brother was working at the zoo, the local zoo, at age maybe 8 or 9. I discovered a fudgesicle at age 4, changed my life. There was heroin addiction in my family, you name it, it was there. And so, I mean, the thing, you know, we all know, I mean, I could go in details about what it was like to be a 300-pound kid in high school being picked on, you know, being concerned that I would not fit in those desks that would have the wraparound, you know, where you'd sit and it'd have a wraparound desk. You know, and the wearing corduroys because that was the fashion, and the inside of my legs were rubbed raw because of the corduroy rubbing. I mean, those things. Bathing was not didn't appreciate it. Bathing was not a good thing. I guess I didn't want to touch my body, and also the shower was a little bit too small for me. Anyway, so. I was pretty miserable. I mean, I wanted to kill myself basically every day. I thought about ways I could kill myself. And one thing that happened was my stepfather was berating me one time about how I was a fat ass kid and I didn't have any friends. And why didn't I get out and play in the yard or do something besides sit around and watch TV? And I said, if I could, I would. I mean, I it's they I was told that the best exercise to lose weight was a push up or a push yourself away from the table, and I it was food was not about nutrition. I mean, food is about comfort. Food's about love. Food is about a lot of stuff, but it's not about like, well, a calorie. My stepfather then, or somehow I got directed to my first OA meeting when I was 17 years old. And I always like to share this. At my first meeting, this man said that he had lost 100 pounds. And I believed him. And he was keeping it off. And I'd never heard of such a thing as someone losing 100 pounds and keeping it off. I've heard about girls in high school saying they want to lose a couple of pounds, get in their prom dress, but not, I mean, and so it was. It set me on the path, right? It gave me something I didn't have as a 17-year-old boy, which is kind of sad when I think about it, is that I didn't have hope. I was thinking before I went to this meeting, it was like I'm graduating high school. I wasted 4 years of high school because I was fat. I wasted 2 years of junior high because I was fat. I'm going to go off to college. I'm going to waste two, you know, 4 years. I'm going to waste 4 years of college because I'm fat. I'm basically going to waste the rest of my life because I'm fat. And that's compulsive reader thinking to think that my life is based upon my body size. However my life is, that's based upon, and it's just sad to think that. But anyway, so I'd like to say that you offered me a gray sheet of paper and it had a food plan on it. And I took that gray sheet of paper and I worked it quite well. And I lost about 125 pounds, 150 pounds in about 6 months. And I was a 17-year-old boy working at shipping and loading dock between high school and college. And so, of course, I was burning a ton of calories and eating very few calories. And that old dynamic of, if you eat more calories than you need, you put on weight. If you eat less calories than you need, you take off weight. And I always like to say there's not, I've yet to meet a compulsive eater who really likes that formula. Most want to eat what we can whenever we want and not gain an ounce of weight. But anyway, so I lost the weight. But I didn't need the steps there for my alcoholic parents, and I didn't need the higher power because I used to pray to God. I said, God, when I wake up, please let me be thin. And God, please help my parents stop drinking and fighting. My parents kept drinking and fighting, and I'd wake up the same weight I went to bed as. And I kind of got it that God was punishing me for for who I was. I was this horrible, horrible person. And so it was, that was God's punishment. So how could I do step three, or step one and two and three? I mean, why would I want to turn my will, my life to care for that asshole who's punishing me? Also, I couldn't do step four because I had a deep, dark secret. I couldn't tell another living soul. But anyway, I lost the weight. And it's very, we're very clear. If I don't deal with those things that make me seek excess weight, then I'm going to go back and I will go back to excess food, right? And so that's what happened was I didn't write an inventory, I didn't work the steps. I was going to a meeting a week for moral support, encouragement, where it's just to feel good, and it I got back up to 250 pounds roughly. Don't remember my exact top weight at that point in time, but I was in college, and I was way I paid for half my dorm was to work in the kitchen, which is a compulsory eater's delight, I guess, or dream. I got to get half my dorm off, and I got to eat in the kitchen, work in the kitchen, and eat as much as I want. And I love telling the story that I would, one of my jobs in the morning was I would, they would take a sweet roll, and I would have to cut it in thirds and be one, two, three, and I'd be one, two, three. One, two, three. So I was just gaining weight, right? Then I dealt with the deep, dark secret. I came out of the closet. I love telling the story because it's so apropos to my to who I am as a compulsive reader or to my story, is that when I was coming out, I'd go around to everyone going, do you think I'm gay? What do you think? Do you think I'm gay? What do you think? And the reason why it's pertinent to my OA story is because my true self is I'm gay, right? And I had to make sure it was okay with everybody else before I could come out. And that's kind of like a compulsive eater, like going like, okay, if you're okay with it, if you're okay with it, if you're okay with it, then I can do it. And it's like, it's really a shame. I'm like I am who I am, and I don't have to make excuses to defend it. But that's who I was doing, what I was doing. So I came out and I just got developed this nervous stomach and so forth, where I was like, I mean, and I also discovered the wonderful world of fasting at college. And I like to say that it's your folks' responsibility because when I first was going to meetings the first time, it was told it's not the 100th bite that puts the weight on, it's the first. And so at age 17, I learned that my first bite is the dangerous bite. So I learned that if I don't take that first bite, then I'm safe from food. And that concept of safe from food is a concept that normal eaters don't understand because food is not the enemy. Food is just nourishment. So it's not like, oh my God, this food is this animate object that's just going to attack me or whatever. And so I didn't eat all day long, right? You don't eat, and but I was I not an anorexic because I would stop and get 9 or 10 donuts on the way home from the discotheque to deal with all these emotions and feeling I was going through. From the rejections I was felt and all that stuff that being on, I guess, in the marketplace, I guess, whatever you want to call it, that would bring up. And I had to deal with all that rejection I felt. So I'd stop and get 9 or 10 donuts. And I always like to say I never order a dozen donuts because if you order a dozen donuts, it makes you a compulsive overeater. And I didn't want to be a compulsive overeater. So I'm not ordering 9 or 10, I'm only ordering 9 or 10 donuts because I was eating them at one time, right? It's not like I was going to buy 9 or 10 donuts is going to last me for 4 or 5 days. It was like before I got home, those 9 or 10 donuts would be gone. And I also like to say that I didn't order donuts because the donuts has holes in it. And when I'm in my disease, I don't pay for holes in my food. Like I didn't eat Swiss cheese because Swiss cheese, there's part of that cheese that's missing. And I want it all, right? It's once again, cheese is not, it wasn't like the food was nutrition. It's filling a hole in my soul. And so there's no food, holy food does not fill the hole in my soul. So I had to, and the donut shops was full of love, right? So anyway, what happened was I was being fitted for contact lenses, and back in the 1978, and back then you go to the eye doctor and then they take a prescription, they send off for the contact lenses, and then they would come back and you come back a week or two later. And after a couple of attempts of my eye doctor trying to get my prescription right, and this eye doctor was the one who operated my eyes, so he was a good eye doctor. It wasn't, and he couldn't get my prescription right. He said, "Terrell, is there a history of hypoglycemia diabetes in your family?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Terrell, are you eating sugar?" And as a true compulsive eater, when asked about their food, I lied. I said a little. Because I always like to say that 9 or 10 donuts is not a lot of sugar, because a dozen donuts makes you a compulsive eater, not 9 or 10. Also, a 3 pound box of See's candy is when you guys start doing that chemistry work that I say, where I got to get enough protein in me to counterbalance the sugar. I don't know if you understand that concept, but you're trying to keep the binge going. So you got to get you got to get more protein in you to do it, or you just like the binge. Like otherwise, I can get filled up, or I get too jittery or ampy with sugar. So I had to do that chemistry work. So anyway, he said, well, he I so I said a little, and he said, "Well, if I didn't stop eating sugar, I'd be blind within a year." I then went off to Europe with some friends and a guy I had been dating, and so forth. And I put on 30 pounds in 6 weeks. So that's 5 pounds a week. And I'm touring through Europe. So I'm literally traveling, looking at things. So I'm not sitting in front of my TV just watching, watching shows. I'm literally moving and I'm putting in 5 pounds a week. And so it was not on, like I said, not on French cut green beans. It was on French pastries, right? And I remember thinking while I was that I can still see. And when things start to go gray, that's when I will stop. And that's the type of compulsive eater I am. That's the bottom, like, I mean, I guess the bottom feeder, for lack of a better term, that I am, that I'm willing to sacrifice my eyesight for chocolate. And I always like to say it was never for a lot of chocolate. It was just another bite of chocolate, just one more bite, right? I mean, I once was leading this retreat, and I said, once the binge starts, you never know when it's going to end. And this woman raised her hand and said, "I always knew when the binge was going to end." I said, "You did?" She said, "Yeah, tomorrow." So that's how we are. I mean, my brother has this disease, and he likes to say he never gets full; he just gets miserable, right? I mean, that's who we are as compulsive readers. And so I came back to the United States, and I called up my sister who was in program. I said, "Sis, I need to dry out." I tried kicking sugar in Europe. I was in this plaza. I was in Vienna, and I was like literally getting, almost felt like going through DTs. I was getting the shakes, and I was ill because I was trying to kick sugar. And I said, "I need to dry out." And we didn't have eating disorder units back then. And she said, "Well, I wanted to come stay with her for the weekend while I kicked sugar." And she said, "I've got company, but I'll take you to a meeting on Sunday." And this is like Friday or something like that. And I knew what to do from my time beforehand. And my parents were in AA, so I was had exposure to that there was a big book there in the house. I was staying at my stepfather's, and I got out the big book and started reading it from cover to cover. So I went to my first meeting, abstinent. And then I found out from this that my first meeting, there was a man who was a moderate mealer, who was basically means he wasn't doing that rigid gray sheet that I considered rigid. And there was a meeting every night at the Gay and Lesbian Community Service Center. And that's important because I didn't think OA was for me because I was because remember, I came in 1973 the first time. I thought I was full of housewives. Five minutes. Oh my goodness. 5 minutes. And I was full of housewives, and they didn't want gays. They didn't want, no men. It's like, so I was had all these reasons why it wasn't right for me. So I started going to meetings, and I had my spiritual experience. I was walking out of a park after a meeting. I heard this small, still voice that said, "Terrell, you're going to be all right. I love you, and you're as much right to be here as that tree." And it was the first of my life. I didn't feel like I was breathing your air. And so I started working the program, and then I went to my sponsor after a couple of months. I'd lost the weight, and I said, "I'm sick and tired of going to these rooms full of fat ass people talking about their problems. I'm sick and tired of being told when I can and cannot eat, what I can and cannot eat. And I'm done." And he said, "Terrell, remember, you're leaving us. We're not leaving you. If you ever want to come back, we'll be here." My attitude was, "Well, thank you for sharing, right?" And I was done with OA because the bottom line is, I don't want to be a compulsive reader. I don't want to be an Overeaters Anonymous. I don't want this. But as my sponsor said, and if I hang out with you, then I am one of you. So I find that if I don't hang out with you, then I'm not going to be one of you, which is, that stinking thinking, right? That's that type of thinking that we get, like, well, I know. But anyway, so needless to say, a week or two later, on January 5th, 1979, I broke my abstinence. It was on two pieces of toast. And I always say, if I knew it was going to be my last binge, I've done better. But I'm hopelessly addicted to sugar and flour. I was going to sleep, go get my donuts. And I got scared. I said, "God, I cannot do it one more time. Please, I cannot do it one more time." And I went to bed. And on the next day, I got up, and I've been abstinent ever since. And what I couldn't do one more time was not, I can't deal with the insanity that comes with the disease. It wasn't about weight. Wasn't like I'm going to put on more weight, because I had maintained my weight on the donut diet, but I hadn't, but I can't do the, I just can't deal with the insanity. And that's the reason why I'm still in program at 46 years later. It's for, it says you came for the vanity, but stay for the sanity. The program has enabled me to live a life beyond my wildest dreams. I grew up in Los Angeles. I was going to meetings all the time in Los Angeles, so I'm from that area. I've had tremendous, I mean, how do I describe my life in 46 years? I've abstained through everything, right? I've abstained through my sister's death. I've abstained through my sponsor having dementia, and me taking care of her. I've abstained through four, five to four joint replacements. I've abstained through a lot of things. The bottom line is, there's nothing that food's going to answer. I mean, the answer to any of my problem is not in the kitchen. That's the bottom line. That the answer is not in the kitchen. The answer is by working a program. Today my life is unbelievable. I'm now looking at this gorgeous bay in Mexico. I live in Mexico now. I have friends here. I've made friends, and it was difficult for me because I was literally going to be, when I moved here 3 years ago, and I felt like the new fat kid on campus, right? Because I still have that old thinking that comes up, where I have FOMO, and all the there are these cliques, and these cool kids are over there, and they're going to dinners, and I'm not, right? And my dear friend of mine in program said, because I was shirking, I mean, I was shrinking because of that. She said, "Terrell, why are you limiting your sunshine to them? You go and you bring your sunshine to them. Don't look at them to bring their sunshine to you." And it was really a shift in perception, right? And that's what program is about. Program is a shift in perception, because before program, it was be like, well, food is the answer. Before program, it was like, well, what about me and my needs? Before program, it was like, well, if you want something done right, do it yourself. All that stinking thinking is what the program has washed my mind away from. And what I like to say, talk about the gifts of the program. And when I talk about my condo here in PV with amazing ocean view and all that's happened in my life, I have my own business, a very successful business. Those are not the gifts of the program, because program does not guarantee me financial reward. It's not guaranteed. If I put in three prayers and two whatevers, I crank a handle and I get a gift. what perm has enabled me to do is say yes to life. It has made me not live in fear.
Time.
So my life is not based upon fear, and that's one of the greatest gifts that program has given me, not to live my life based upon fear. And by saying yes to life, I get to enjoy life as opposed to being afraid, sitting in my room or living room with the drapes drawn, phone unplugged, and watching TV. Thanks for letting me share.